Well, I think we can all agree on one thing. This year has been like none other. This week I saw someone share online that normal years go January, February, March, April, May, and so on. But 2020 has been more like January, February, March, 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 March. And now somehow it's December. Some of us couldn't be happier about it. We skipped right over Halloween, we pushed right through Thanksgiving, and we have been sipping eggnog and singing Christmas carols for weeks. That's where my 7-year-old daughter is. Every day she makes the rounds, whispering to members of the family what she wants to get the others for Christmas. She demanded that we get a Christmas tree immediately after we finished Thanksgiving dinner. And when we did, this is true, she named it. Yes, she named our Christmas tree Chris. Makes sense, I guess. We've even caught her on her school-owned Chromebook searching Amazon for her own Christmas presents. And how that website isn't prevented by a web filter, I do not know, but I wish it were. Our daughter couldn't be happier that it's December. Others of us, we're not so sure. We've been stuck in March for 281 days. And so this season of Advent may have caught some of us by surprise. We're not quite ready to pick out a tree. We're certainly not cheerful enough to give it a first name. And if that's you this morning, I've got good news for you. You see, the prophet Isaiah wrote a bit about trees too. Not Christmas trees, of course. Christmas trees didn't arrive on the scene until the 16th century in Germany. The prophet Isaiah writes about trees in the 8th century BC from the northern kingdom of Israel. In chapter 10 of the book bearing his name, Isaiah declares, See, the Lord Almighty will lop off the boughs with great power. The lofty trees will be felled, the tall ones will be brought low. He will cut down the forest thickets with an axe. Lebanon will fall before the mighty one. See, Isaiah is not thinking of Clark Griswold driving into the snowy foothills outside suburban Chicago to cut down a spruce tree for his living room. No, Isaiah has a different kind of tree in mind entirely. You see, in ancient texts like this one, trees were often symbolic of a nation. There was a reason Jesus cursed the fig tree, remember? See, Isaiah has in mind the oak, the cypress, the juniper trees of ancient Assyria. The tall and lofty forest that Isaiah speaks to refers to the Assyrians who began taking captive the northern kingdom of Israel in 722 BC. Isaiah envisions God's axe of divine judgment chopping down Assyria's forest-like army. Isaiah declares that God will lop off the boughs, the lofty trees will be felled, the tall ones will be brought low. The God of Israel will cut down the forest thickets with an axe. But the Assyrians were not the only ones who had been cut down, just like we are not the only ones working through the challenges of 2020. You see, Isaiah's own people felt the same way. They also felt cut down. Perhaps you do too. And so, here's the good news. Because Isaiah continues this metaphor that he began in chapter 10. He continues it at the outset of Isaiah chapter 11. He writes, "A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of power, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, and he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes. He will not decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness, he will judge the needy. With justice, he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with a bear, their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the hole of the cobra, and the young child will put his hand in the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. For the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious. So, my daughter couldn't be more excited for Christmas, but what about you? If you're not quite there yet, that's okay, and here's why. The prophet Isaiah wasn't quite there yet either. And so, chapter 11 begins where many of us are at. If you've never read the Bible, and you only see the inspirational and motivational passages that you see on social media, you might think that Scripture is filled with all happiness all the time, that it only includes a pie in the sky, everything's great outlook on life. But that's not true. The writers of Scripture were realists. They were truth tellers, perhaps none more than the prophets, like Isaiah. We think of prophets as those who point to the future, and that's part of it. But prophets, at their outset, in their own day, before their prophecies were fulfilled, they were seers. Isaiah was not afraid to call it like it was. And how was it? Well, verse 1 tells us. God will come one day, and God will lop down those tall and lofty trees. God will take down that Assyrian army. But in Isaiah's day, the Davidic line, God's people, the royal line of kings, was no longer a tall and lofty tree. It was just a stump. It was cut down. It was dead. It was decaying. Like what's left behind when Clark Griswold cut down that spruce tree outside of suburban Chicago. What's left in the ground, that dead and decaying stump, that's all that's left of the Davidic line of God's people. Isaiah can't even bring himself to call it the stump of David. Why? Well, because David was the king who had it all. David was the king who had it all, who had all the trappings of royalty, and it was just too painful for the prophet to reflect on all that had been since lost. These days, news of the Queen and Prince Charles and William and Kate and Harry and Meghan, they fill our news feeds for whatever reason, but Isaiah couldn't even go there. He couldn't even think about what the Davidic line had become. And so instead of the reminder of a prince in a palace, of a king in comfort, instead of pointing back to David, Isaiah goes one generation further. Isaiah points back to David's father, Jesse, a humble shepherd, one who carried one of those staffs like we thought about a few moments ago that look so much like our candy canes. And perhaps what Isaiah was feeling mirrors your experience this December. It's almost too much to remember how life was back in March. As much as we long for life to return to some sense of normalcy, we almost can't imagine it. It has been a long year. But here's the good news. Because Isaiah sees something in that stump. Isaiah sees something in that stump that has been cut down, that is dead and decaying. Isaiah sees something within that royal line which had fallen into dishonor and disrepute. Isaiah sees a shoot, a sprout, a tiny little twig, an infinitesimally tiny little branch emerging from what once was. The Hebrew word for it is netzer. Netzer. You see the good news that grows out of that dead and decaying stump. The good news that grows out of the dishonor and disrepute of the royal line. The good news comes not as evolution, but revelation. In other words, it's not something that grows and takes shape over time through the hard work of honest people, no matter how good and no matter how hardworking or well-intentioned they are. The good news does not come from evolution, but revelation. See, the kind of progress we often envision can just create more tall and lofty trees that one day will be chopped down. But Isaiah sees something different. When he looks in that dead and decaying stump, in the dishonor and the disrepute of the Davidic royal line, Isaiah sees rescue and restoration and redemption in the most unlikely of places. Isaiah sees all this for his people, not coming from the north or the south, from the east or the west, but coming instead from above. Coming not from the labor of humanity, but from the liberation of God. And this shoot, this sprout, this nate sayer, he says, will bear fruit. Because the Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and might, of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. Those are the characteristics of this shoot sprouting from the stump. But what are the effects of those characteristics? Well, he tells us righteousness and justice. Isaiah tells us that all who feel chopped down would be raised up. That this naysayer, this one who is coming, this one who is promised, will give decisions for the poor of the earth. Even the wolf and the lamb, the calf and the lion, the infant will play near the cobra's den. The young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. Now, you might be thinking, it was all well and good until I envisioned my child or my grandchild playing with a poisonous snake. Fair enough. Not long ago, I was at a home built by my grandparents, just south of the entrance to the Sequoia National Park. It's a place where there's a lot of really big trees. No one lives in the house currently, and so the wildlife that lives around the house were quite surprised to see me. And I was quite surprised to happen upon a rattlesnake one sunny October afternoon. In that moment, I quickly realized why my father had left 5 or 6 shovels at various places around the property. One of them was only 10 feet away, and it came in handy. That poor little rattlesnake never saw it coming. Neither from the north, the south, the east, or the west, that shovel rained down on him from above. And in my excitement, it chopped him into 4 or 5 different pieces. Left him there for some other wildlife to enjoy for an afternoon snack. The next morning, he was gone. Now, it might be that in the new heaven and the new earth, on God's holy mountain, cobras and vipers will be defanged and they'll become children's play toys. It very well could be. But don't allow that image of the future, of that possible play toy for your child or grandchild, don't allow that image to make you think that Isaiah's prophecy is fulfilled only in the future. Because Isaiah is looking forward to this shoot that sprouts from the stump, to this tiny little naysayer that emerges from that dead and decaying stump, from the dishonor and the disrepute of the Davidic royal line. It's not only in the new heaven and the new earth. It has begun in and through the person of Jesus on that first Christmas morning. Isaiah's poetry is meant right now to point us to the animal instincts within ourselves. That's why he gives all those examples of different animals who are enemies that somehow get along. He's trying to awaken within us the ways in which we have become divided against one another. The divisions that we have created between ourselves and others. Think back to the year we've had. Think back to the 281 days of March. Can you think of any differences or any divisions that have crept up between you? Members of your family, co-workers, members of this church. See, after all the references to animals, that's why Isaiah concludes, in that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for all the peoples. The nations will rally to him. And when the scriptures speak of both peoples and nations, it's a kind of shorthand. It's calling to mind both Jew and Gentile, people and nations, God's people and other nations, Jew and Gentile. It's meant to awaken within us to recognize those differences between different groups. It's an ancient shorthand for all that could divide us, all that could differentiate us from one another. And Isaiah's prophecy has not been fulfilled in its fullness. That will only come at Jesus' second advent when he returns again. But we are meant to live into that which we have been called to in Jesus. For he is that nacer. He is that shoot that sprouts from the dead stump, the dead and decaying stump, the dishonor and disrepute of David's royal line comes Jesus. In December of 1981, Henry Nouwen wrote, "The words from last night's liturgy have stayed with me during the day. Our salvation comes from something small, something tender, something vulnerable, something hardly noticeable. God, who is the creator of the universe, comes to us in smallness, in weakness, in hiddenness." Paul would later write that the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. The foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom. Now and continues, he says, I find this a hopeful message that somehow I keep expecting loud and impressive events to convince me and others of God's saving power. But over and over again, I'm reminded that spectacles, power plays, big events are the ways of the world. Our temptation is to be distracted by them and made blind to the shoot that shall sprout from the stump. Well, when I have no eyes to see the small signs of God's presence, the smile of a baby, the carefree play of children, the words of encouragement and gestures of love offered by friends, then I will always be tempted to despair. That small child of Bethlehem, the unknown young man of Nazareth, the rejected preacher, the naked man on the cross, he asks for my full attention. The work of our salvation takes place in the midst of a world that continues to shout and scream and overwhelm us with its claims and its promises. But the promise is hidden in the shoot that sprouts from the stump, a shoot that hardly anyone notices. Now one concludes, I remember seeing a film on the human misery and devastation brought about by the bomb on Hiroshima. Among all the scenes of terror and despair emerged one image of a man quietly writing a word in calligraphy. All his attention was directed to writing that one word. That image made this gruesome film a hopeful film. And isn't that what God is doing? Writing the divine word of hope in the midst of our dark world. So maybe you're singing along with Christmas carols while sipping eggnog. Maybe you're like my daughter, searching around on Amazon for the perfect gift for everyone or for yourself. But if not, especially if not, if this December you feel cut down, if you feel like you've been brought low, look not to a Christmas tree with its own first name. Look instead to the stump. Sit with that stump. Wait upon that stump. Be not distracted by the big displays of the world all around us, by the voices that shout louder and louder. Quiet yourself and look to the stump. For it is the stump. It is out of that stump that grows a shoot, a sprout, a tiny little nacer. Scholars think that that word nacer may have inspired the name of Jesus' hometown, Nazareth. Look not to the tall and lofty trees of the forest, but look to that promise hidden in the shoot that sprouts from the stump. It's this shoot, it's this Jesus from Nazareth. It's him who was filled with the fullness of the Spirit. It's him who brings forth righteousness and justice. It's him who brings forth good news to all of us who feel chopped down. They will be raised up. It's this Jesus who leads by the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, of counsel and might, of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And Jesus, this Advent, despite everything happening around us, this Jesus can bring those qualities into our life as well. It's this Jesus who comes for us, not from north or south or the east or the west. It's Jesus who comes to us from above. It's this Jesus who strikes the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips, he slays the wicked. But Jesus arrives not like that shovel on top of that rattlesnake. Jesus comes not to chop down the tall and lofty trees. No, the rod of his mouth, the breath of his lips, leads to the spilling of his own blood. Jesus does come to slay the wicked. He does come to bring judgment by the breath of his lips. and he himself takes the punishment, that we might receive that righteousness and that justice. Jesus is that shoot that sprouted from the stump of Jesse. Jesus is that little baby born in the manger. Jesus is that tiny little naysayer from Nazareth who gave his life on the tree on Calvary